So I have a belief about the future of social media and the future of art that I have been pitching to different people and talking about with different people. And most often I'm met with like blank stares, and sometimes I'm met with people disagreeing with me. And then rarely, on occasion, I'm met with like total delight and interest and intrigue. And that last category is keeping me going here. And so I've talked to you a little bit about this off of the show, but I wanted to bring it up here. I think that the future of art for most artists is going to be, in some form or another, back to a patronage model, where artists and their audience have like a direct one-to-one relationship, and the art that they're making is funded almost entirely through that direct one-to-one relationship. And that is something that seems totally normal and doable and not insane to me. But the way that things are currently set up doesn't necessarily support that model. And I think that we've come to a place where we're just so accustomed to and reliant on the older structures like advertising that it just doesn't necessarily click in people's minds. So I wanted to talk about that today and see if that's something that has like been on your radar at all. I'm assuming that, you know, you've heard of like Patreon and seen different things like that. But, you know, is this something that you're engaging with? Have you ever become a patron of somebody's art? Or is that like just foreign to you at this point in time?
On the contrary, I subscribe to a lot of things, and it seems like a very natural thing to do to me. What I wonder about, considering, you know, patronage as a model for future sustainable internet culture, is why it isn't already here. It's not clear to me what's missing from the tool chain, because it seems like all of the pieces are there. I'm patronizing things at various levels already, and you know, at the rate at which people are paying for subscriptions to content bundles of various kinds, it seems at least like the ice has been broken on the idea, the mass idea, that you have to pay directly for entertainment again. Everything being free on the internet era is, you know, there's at least like a parallel process that millions of people are involved in of paying for stuff. So I don't fully know yet why patronage is still considered this like dream, because it seems like the only thing missing is a bunch of consumers to make different choices. I have two Patreons that I support. I pay $4 a month in total to Patreon for one blog with an email newsletter and one podcast. But I also subscribe to a few news outlets. Both of them I subscribe to through iTunes subscriptions. That's my choice method for subscribing to things, because I feel like I have control over it. And like direct subscriptions to magazines are extremely difficult to cancel, but I have had those recently, and I'm currently choosing to subscribe to one newspaper or two newspapers, but both for sort of magazine style content via Apple subscriptions. I'm also subscribed to Apple News Plus and Apple Music, and I definitely plan to subscribe to the TV service as well. I don't know about the games yet. We'll have to see, but that's sort of a different model for the mass market, I guess, is like
subscriptions,
bundled mm-hmm. subscriptions. Mm-hmm. But the psychology, I think, is the same, especially because the user or the person, the subscriber, at least has some awareness that the things they're choosing to read from that bundle are the things that they're supporting. And then in the case of the Washington Post and Haaretz, the English language version of an Israeli newspaper that I am subscribed to, like those are one-to-one relationships that, I mean, the reason that it's not patronage is only, I guess, because the word subscription has existed in the news space for some time.
Right. It came first.
I consider those two organizations and the human beings behind them, the bylines that I'm reading, to be people that I'm supporting in the same way. And I feel like I have capacity for more subscriptions in my life. And well, and then there's the music part, which, you know, I'm not subscribed on an ongoing basis to any musicians, but I still buy records when I like them. You know, I basically think of music streaming as like a trial, free trial, or like a, you know, an all you can eat trial of albums. And then when I like one, I buy one. That's how I do it. So, you know, this psychology is not new to me at all. And it feels like the tools are there. The dream is alive for a lot of creators. I wonder if you have any insight in, as to why it hasn't come true already for the whole art economy.
Well, I think it has and it hasn't at the same time because of how we're accustomed to like getting the materials and the art and the news and the content, which I'd love to talk more about the word content soon.
Yes.
You know, in that it hasn't been something that we go to an artist and we pay directly for a long time. Like you are over there buying albums. I haven't bought an album in God knows how long. That hasn't been the way that I have listened to music in forever. There has been this like slow trickle of subscriptions that has been ramping up progressively over the years where I remember when I signed up for Netflix and that was like the only subscription that I had. And then you before that had like a cable subscription or a newspaper subscription. And now there are dozens of subscriptions that you could possibly have that are in all different mediums, whether that be television or movies or music or whatever. You know, some of them software. More successful than others. Yeah, software, absolutely. You know, different apps that are able to work and subsist on a subscription model now as opposed to a one-time purchase. And what I think is interesting in my mind is that that hasn't gone from go give a subscription to this actual material good and instead just pay a subscription to this artist to make art, whatever that art they want it to be. And like when I ask you that question, there are indeed patronages that you are supporting, but there's also just the general type of subscription that we've been giving for a good while now. You know, I would actually say that it is interesting. I hadn't thought about the fact that those are becoming more like actual patronages where the money that you are giving is going directly to those people. In the case of like, what is it? Apple News Plus. Mm-hmm. I think that's the idea, right? Is like the money that you give, it's going to the things that you're reading. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Yeah. My understanding is Apple takes its slice. A flat rate like it does for everything. Although I don't think we know what the rate is. And I think the rumor is that it's 50% of your subscription, but I don't have verification of that. That's just sort of from those innuendo stories that have leaked from the media news media side. And then the other half, I believe, gets divvied up to the people you actually read. And I don't know whether it's on the basis of time spent or just like number of articles or what have you, or right, if it's like, right. You know, if you're rewarded for people finishing articles, like who knows what kind of secret sauce they have. But yes, I believe the idea is that the people you read are the people who get paid.
This has been happening in a few different ways on a few different websites. I know Medium started doing that, where mm-hmm. if you have a subscription to Medium, that money goes directly to the people that you're reading and it gets like chunked out and sent by it, like people get like a congratulations, you made $23 or, you know, $200 or whatever because of this one article that you wrote, which is cool. So here's the tail end of my belief in patronage that may be the crazier part, which is I actually think that the way forward for art and for patronage is to not actually focus in on the content that's being made, but instead to just go specifically, directly, and fully to the artist. Like just because. And I look at some of the Patreons that I am interested in and like, and I'm noticing that some of these people are getting a substantial amount of money on a monthly basis or a regular basis, and they're not really providing any reward whatsoever. And I'm recognizing that for a long time, my mental model for a subscription has been like a paywall model, or just something along the, or like a Kickstarter model, you know, pay me X amount of money and you get product, you get this material, you get this art. And I actually don't think that that's the thing that people care about. When I hear the people that you are supporting, I don't necessarily think that it's some specific thing that has compelled you to pay that price. Mm-hmm. I think instead, typically, it's just like you like the person so much and you really want them to be able to continue doing that thing, so you're willing to give that person money. Isn't that true?
That's true in all the cases except the music case. And I think that that's what's interesting about the difference between buying records the way people used to, and I still do, and the patronage model, whereas like buying a record is like a reward for completing a discrete work that you get, that the artist gets after the fact, except in the cases where they crowdfund albums in advance, which is kind of a strange model and usually involves a little bit of deceit, where like they're already like partially underway, and the amount of money that they're raising is not enough to pay for the whole thing or anything like that. It's just sort of like replacing the advance from the record company or whatever. But like in some cases, it's for real. But paying for an album is a sort of incentive for those artists to finish a specific work, and they can take as long as it takes. But if it takes too long, they don't get any money for a long time. And that has always seemed like a humane model to me, because I believe in the album and I believe it's ready when it's ready. At the same time, when I first heard the idea of Patreon, which I believe was when it was launched, I was at XOXO and Jack Conti spoke, and I don't remember if that was like the year it launched or if it was the year after it launched or something like that. But it was a music concept at first, and the way it was explained succinctly was, you know, you pay somebody X dollars a month to produce X things, and that's what they do. And so it sort of like puts them on the hook in advance that they are accountable to the people who are supporting them to finish stuff. And that incentive is both understandable to me and kind of troubling to me, because like it puts the pressure on.
It's troubling to you because you think that might be like too much pressure for the artist to actually get something out the door?
Yeah, or like it incentivizes maybe mediocre but done over like
I understand.
Perfect but not done yet.
Yeah,
you know, like it's not really so interesting to me in most cases to subscribe to the byproduct of the creative process for musicians. I'm speaking just about musicians because I think different media have very different processes, and of course, like within a particular medium, like different artists have different processes. There are bands to whom I would subscribe to hear there to like listen to live streams of their rehearsals, you know, like and you know, there are already bands whose like garbage demos I buy, you know, like Radiohead just had this episode, which I guess is legit because just like enough time has passed that it would have been debunked if it had been fake news. But what happened was somebody like hacked a Radiohead server and got a bunch of like demo, like many, many hours of demo material, and held it for ransom and, you know, wanted $100,000 or whatever it was. And the band just said, screw you, we're putting it out on Bandcamp, and 100% of the proceeds will be donated to some charity. And you know, it was like days and days of music. It was like many, 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 many hours of music. And I bought that and I've listened to it and it's like very rough, but it contains the seeds of a lot of my favorite songs. And it also shows you, I mean, something that like diehard Radiohead fans already know, but like it's the more evidence of it you see, the more amazing it is that like their material, like all is mixed to, you know, like they've released many albums over 20 years, almost 30 years. And the, the order in which things get released may not have anything to do with the order in which it was created. Like songs they just released a couple years ago are on these demos from the 90s. And like, the way that they just sit on something and work it and work it and work it until it's ready to go. And it may be 10 years later that they release the song. Like that's really inspiring for a band like that, where like every single moment of every single song is cherished by fans as like almost like a sculptural masterpiece, like something that's just taken hundreds and hundreds of hours of refinement. I would, you know, subscribe to their demos, but I don't necessarily want like some like songwriter trying to break out that I like, that I saw somewhere and I liked. I'll pay them $2 a month. Like that's not like a burdensome amount, and I am all about supporting like struggling artists, but I'm not necessarily trying to listen to them like crank out a song a day or whatever it is.
Well, even that though is proving my point, which is that you are much more likely to subscribe and support. Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm even, as I'm saying this, I like the word support better than subscribe, because subscribe automatically sounds like I'm getting something back, where support is just exactly what it is, which is support.
Sure.
You would much rather support a small artist by just kicking them a few bucks a month than you would to have him pitch you and say, please give me money. And if you do, I'm going to give you behind the scenes access. Like that isn't even as interesting to you as just him saying, please support me. What I'm getting at is this. When I look at Patreons and I look at Kickstarter and I look at these different methods of, you know, actually getting a one-to-one relationship where the fans are driving and funding an artistic project, I always see it as a give X amount and get X amount back type of thing. Uh-huh. Amanda Palmer, I think, is one of the most successful musicians to do this on Patreon. And it's like, give $1 a month and you get some kind of like social media feed access that no one else gets. Give $3 a month and get some email. Give $5 a month and now you get access to like something even better than that, you know, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger with the more money that you give. And what I'm saying is I just don't think that we actually even care that much about the incentives. We're much more likely to just give to an artist because the art rules so much and has impacted us in some powerful way. And that's it. Like, period, full stop. I just want to give an artist money if I am so impacted by them that like they've moved me to do that in the first place. And whether or not it says you're going to get some weird email or you're going to get access to some private paywalled feed is beside the point. I don't think that most people care about that kind of stuff as much as we think they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people certainly don't care about it for very many artists and very many things at all, really. Like there was a period of time where I sort of thought podcasting was the ultimate digital like medium for musicians, that you know, they had so much audio that was not in the form of like finished art, but they have like mics rolling all the time and they're traveling all the time and like bored and whatever, and like that's perfect time to like answer like tweets, you know, Q&A style or whatever. I thought that the intimacy generated by that is exactly the kind of thing that you need to galvanize your audience to support you financially. And I'm not saying paid for that directly. I'm saying like the more they love you, the more they're willing to support you. And I do believe that part. But I then realized that like there are maybe two bands that I would ever listen to that ever. And like, as much as I love getting, you know, 18 hours of Radiohead demos once or twice over the course of their career, like if I was getting 18 hours a week of that, I would obviously stop listening to it. So I think you're right about the motivation. I think that that's why this sort of incentive, like, I think it's upsetting to think about incentives when you're thinking about supporting something that you love versus a transaction with a company. You know, I think about the incentives all day when I'm paying Apple for things, but like, I don't want to feel like an investor in an artist that expects a return of some kind. I want to like sleep well at night because an artist whose work and whose soul I love is taken care of in the world, you know, like, yeah, I think you're right about that motivation. But I think that does leave open the question of how artists can and should cultivate those kinds of relationships. And I think that there's something kind of anathema to the artist's soul and mentality in that kind of pursuit. Maybe not for everyone, but certainly for a lot of the artists I know. I've like been around a lot of artists over the last 10 years, and a lot of them are not trying to hang out with people. They're trying to stay in the shop making stuff.
That's a good example. I feel like so many of the Patreon type rewards, or just patronage type rewards in general, are all like, you get to be part of a monthly live stream with me, or, you know, like those types of things. We'll do an email correspondence. And I just think, I can't imagine that the majority of artists actually want to do that. Like, no disrespect to their audience, obviously, but I certainly wouldn't want to have like one-on-one interactions with a stranger that is kind of like an obligation in my life, you know, because they paid me money. Like, that feels weird, right?
Yeah, that's super.
Yeah, cool. Exactly. And like that kind of stuff just feels to me like patronage 0.5, you know, like it's the beta of patronage is these people trying to figure out how to do it on a reward-based system where the more money you give, the better their reward is, because I don't think that the rewards are even going to make it to the final product of patronage, whatever that might be.
It's certainly like a halfway idea, or an idea that's sort of based on not fully evolved cultural norms. It's only a relationship in like scare quotes,
yeah.
You know, in the same way that social is in scare quotes online. And you know, we're clearly trying to get to the other side of that, where like where all it really is a relationship. What is the interface to that relationship, given that it's remote, that you're not like seeing this person at the bar every Thursday night in most cases, you know, unless that really is how it works, unless like local scenes equipped with the right tools are how the future of this looks. Like, what is the medium of the relationship? If it's not work, if it's not finished products of some kind or like output, then what is it? And if it is, like, how does that interaction get structured other than as a transaction? Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
To draw on personal experience, I think that the thing that's most important here is not necessarily the material that the artist is creating or the relationship that is being falsely created. To me, it's about just like presence. And what got me really thinking about this on like a new level, because it's something that I've been thinking about for a couple of years now, but it was actually a year ago when the fire came through Reading and I lost my house. Mm-hmm. And understandably, it was hard for me to sleep for a good while after that happened. And I did not have a normal bedtime routine anymore. I just had a little more insomnia than I've ever encountered in my life. And one of the ways that I passed the time at night when everyone around me was asleep but myself is I watched a video game streamer stream video games. And it was somebody that I just kind of casually followed for years. And I had never really watched any of his streams. I'm not a big video game stream watcher, but it was awesome in like that. It was exactly what I needed in that time of my life. You know, I just needed something to watch and a familiar voice and somebody that I enjoyed. And I would often fall asleep watching these streams. And, you know, if you have not ever watched video game streams, it sort of works on like a video on demand type way as well. So it wasn't always live. It often wasn't live. I would just watch like old streams that had been archived on Twitch or YouTube or wherever they were. And the person impacted me so much. His presence became so helpful in my life that I started kicking him a few bucks on Patreon for a while because I watched his videos for a long time. And then the desire to do that passed and my sleep schedule resumed into a somewhat normal routine. And I stopped watching it. And at some point, I stopped giving him money on Patreon. But the presence that he had in my life at that time was so substantial that it felt like the obvious thing to do to reward that presence with my money and like make it keep happening. Because I understood that he didn't really have many ads. He didn't really have that many people following him on Patreon, but I knew that I could support him that way. So I did. And I think that the thing for me is that there are enough people in the world to support artists making things that if that artist is a big presence in your life, I think that you'll want to support them. Maybe not forever, maybe just for a season, but the amount of art that could come out of just that type of transaction, I think is a substantial amount and would benefit artists a lot more than the previous models of like advertising and labels and all the different things that had their own weird trappings.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be true, right? Like, and we've talked about Kevin Kelly's Thousands True Fans a lot of times on here, I think. And, that the math of that is just impossible to deny, that all you need is 1,000 people, which is like a fraction of a fraction of a percent of the people that are out there. You know, like a good number to hold it up against is the billion active Apple devices right now. Yeah. Or billion active iPhones right now, you know.
That's interesting to think about.
You know, like this is the same kind of economics that app developers use where they're like, but they don't ever expect $100, right? Like that's the money figure in the 1,000 True Fans calculation is if you can get $100 a year out of 1,000 people, you're the most comfortable artist you could possibly expect to be. If it were just if there were like some known way to go out on the internet and find 1,000 people, one at a time, just find people one at a time. If you could find one person a day to love your art, you would be at 1,000 people in 3 years, right? And then you're done. Like it would take 3 years of one person a day to build your whole career as an artist.
Right.
So like the tools to find one person a day have been out there for a long time. Where's the disconnect if it is really so simple?
I think that part of the disconnect is just that it's not something that most people are doing. And I know that some people are doing it. And I feel like Bandcamp was doing it before Patreon for musicians, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They've been doing some type of subscription thing for a long while now.
I think the subscription might actually be a newer product. Mm. They've been selling albums. And I should have brought them up earlier. Not only do I buy music there, my iCloud music library stuff has changed the calculus about where I buy music slightly in extremely boring ways that are not relevant to this discussion unless they somehow end up being relevant. But for a long time, I was going to Bandcamp first to try and get the album there because I liked the files better. They give you like straight up 320 kilobit per second MP3s with no touch of DRM, you know, just like we used to get off of the back of a truck, except totally legally. So, and you can actually choose lossless quality too. So I preferred the downloads there. So that was one reason I was going to Bandcamp. But then I started releasing music on Bandcamp, and it's like the most favorable conditions you could possibly release music online. Like, I've made between the two, well, actually, I don't even know how much Ariel's has made. Ariel's album was released as part of a sort of kickstart her first year of rabbinical school. And she raised a lot of money in up front for that, but then also sold a bunch of downloads. So let's not count that one. The two albums that I've released on Bandcamp, I made like $2,000, which is way more money than I ever expected to make from recorded music in my life, because that's not like something I ever considered myself professional at. When I say I made $2,000, I mean after what Bandcamp takes. Like, that's my take-home amount of money, because Bandcamp just takes a little service charge off the top and then just puts the money in your PayPal account immediately when somebody pays you. So it's like so much easier to deal with than all the crap you have to do to be on a commercial music store. I did pay one of these services, subscription services, to put my first album on iTunes and Spotify and stuff, and it was miserable. I had to like sign contracts, and I didn't even know what I was signing in some cases, and you have to pay an annual fee to keep your stuff up there. And like, I never made that money back on those stores, but I made it back on Bandcamp. So, you know, sorry to go off on a tear on Bandcamp, but like, that's another example. I mean, I think there are successful examples of Bandcamp people who have made it. But like, it's there. It's a tool. The tool is there. The tool is there for you to like put your record out and start finding your 1,000 true fans. It even like handles your email for you. Like, you can send messages to people, and like, you know, it like has newsletter functionality. So like, it has everything you need. You can sell merch. I sold t-shirts on mine. They all sold out. It was awesome. That's all you need. So where is everybody? I mean, you're right. Not everybody's doing it, but like, why not?
I think a big part of it is because if the way that we're pitching patronage is you as an artist are now responsible for not only getting people, your audience, to support you, but you're also responsible for rewarding that audience with whatever you've told them they're going to get. That is a daunting type of work for artists that we just talked about as
yes,
not typically being interested in actually interacting with the audience on like a regular basis.
Yes.
And I mean, I
should add, putting t-shirts in an envelope and mailing them was horrible. I hated that.
Exactly. And that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, because I'm definitely not intending to paint all artists into a corner where they're like recluses and have no interest in interacting with the plebeian, you know, crowds. I mean it more in that like the skill set of an artist that's good at making music or animation or videos or whatever it might be does not directly correlate to them being good having a monthly live stream or putting merch in a physical box and sending it at the post office or all of the random things that typically have to be done if you're rewarding an audience. And I think that weird extra step that we've required artists to take is completely insane. And like, to me, it's where the Patreon model totally breaks down. And I've had many artists in my life who do different things. I have an artist that's a friend of mine who's got like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people following him on Instagram because he writes poetry there. And that is a really cool thing, but it definitely doesn't pay the bills, right? Like, shocking.
Yeah.
Having hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and getting hundreds of thousands of likes on every post does not correlate to a check in the mail. And so because of that, I said to him, you should start a Patreon. And I've said that to many artists. And what I've seen them do is get really excited by it, start thinking about the rewards they have to give, and then either feel totally inadequate, like what they have does not actually correlate to good rewards, or feel totally burnt out on that and like try it for a little bit and then get weary at the responsibility of having to do that and then give up completely. Mm-hmm. And that sucks, because I think that the people who typically say, wow, I'm so glad you're on Patreon, I'm so glad I can support you directly, aren't saying it because you're going to get a newsletter now. Like, that's not the reason that they were excited. And to use that guy as an example, I have been in rooms with him where people have said, like, I read a poem and it really touched me in a very important time, and thank you. Like, what can I do to support you? You know, there are artists that have fans that are saying, what can I do? Like, I would love to be able to financially support you so you make more of this. And there's a breakdown somewhere where the artist isn't able to do it. And that, like, drives me crazy as someone who wants to see more good art in the world.
So are you interested in seeing some sort of unconditional, I'm going to say the word subscription, but I mean it in a technical sense, not in a, like, you know, cultural sense? Is the problem that needs to be solved here, like, a solution for that fan, so that they don't have to ask what to do?
I think so. Like, I think that what needs to exist is platforms where the artist can just say, let me make good stuff. And people say, okay, sounds great. And that's it. Like, one of my favorite examples is Humans of New York. They have a Patreon that has over 20,000 people subscribing to it every month. And all of their rewards are like, it says something like weird and generic. Like, $1 gets you, thank you for subscribing, you now get access to the blog. $3 gets you, thank you for subscribing, you now get access to the blog. Mm-hmm. And it just says that over and over for every single one. And you look at the blog and it's like, you know, some tertiary, very not thought out product that the guy behind Humans of New York is putting out. Clearly, the amount of people that are paying that money, the 20,000 people, are doing it because they like tumblr.com/humansofnewyork, or maybe it's instagram.com/HNOY. I don't know where his main followers are these days. I think it used to be a Tumblr, right?
Right. Yeah. It was a Tumblr at first, but who knows?
Yeah. Who knows what it is now? I bet it's probably, you know, Facebook and Instagram or something. And I think actually the last time that I looked at it, you know, the posts for him or for Amanda or, you know, Amanda Palmer, one of these big artists, it was like, you know, click here to support it so you can see this post. And the post had like 70 likes or something. Meanwhile, they have 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 people supporting them. And my point is, like, the people that are supporting are just doing it because they want to, not because the material that's paywalled is so damn good that they have to see what's there. I don't think that's why anybody's doing that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to me, I want to see more artists who are able to find platforms that just reward them for being good artists and for making things that have impact in people's lives and for being the type of artist that is a presence in people's lives that they require, you know, in ways that is like unmeasurable. There's no reward that could possibly say, oh, okay, that's the amount of money and that's the type of reward that I deserve, you know, in return. That just doesn't seem right at all. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what that means for the future. And I feel like we've seen many different people try this, right? Like, not necessarily in that way. Patreon kind of did, but they went more Kickstarter reward route. But I feel like Apple Music's tried to create platforms for artists before. I feel like there are multiple little places where people have been doing this type of thing, and it never has seemed like something that's taken off in the way that it deserves to. But I just wonder if it's because it hasn't happened yet.
So one of the things that, one of the threads I've been following in the music business lately, and I've been following it in my capacity as an Apple reporter. So, but obviously I'm also a musician and I'm also an Apple Music subscriber and like user of Apple services. So I have a vested interest in this, but because I'm covering it like a news story, I'm reading a lot more widely than I think I would have otherwise. I'm reading about Spotify's business. I'm reading about Amazon's business. And I'm reading about Apple's business to the extent that there's anything known about it. And for Apple Music, there's a surprising amount. It seems like execs are talking to press a lot relative to other divisions of Apple. They're trying to establish sort of post Jimmy Iovine era there, you know, like old school record guy. They're trying to sort of move past that, it feels like. And the story I'm watching most closely, particularly as a head-to-head competition between Spotify and Apple, is the publishing side. And they're both making moves into the legal and, you know, well, the legal aspects of owning music rights, and also the financing of, you know, publishing original music, like of their, that they own the publishing rights to, or share the publishing rights to. And, you know, the advantage of that is obvious, because it means they don't have to pay the publishers for the rights to stream the music. The big thing about streaming music services is that the platforms want to cut, the publishers want to cut, the labels want to cut. Everybody wants a cut, and then the artist gets the little tiny slice left over at the end. We all know this. I think what we might not realize about streaming music in particular is that it's extremely expensive to run a streaming music service because you're paying out so much money. It may not all be going to artists, but you're certainly paying many, many millions of dollars a month out of what you have coming in. So a lot of people are talking about Spotify's move into podcasting. The reason, like, or one very sensible business reason that Spotify would move into podcasting is they don't have to pay anyone for that content. That content is all up and free. So every minute a Spotify subscriber spends listening to podcasts is a minute that Spotify does not spend paying a record label.
Do they still run ads on those podcasts? I never thought about that, for free.
I don't know. I don't know what the ad model is on the podcast side for Spotify. I sort of consider it a sideshow in podcasting. So like, I haven't really looked too deeply into it. But apparently people are listening to it, but that's just because they're on Spotify.
If you're paying $9.99 a month to Spotify and you spend 50 of those hours of the month listening to podcasts instead of music, that's a bigger chunk of the $9.99 that's going straight to Spotify instead. So it makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in order to sort of reduce those costs, Spotify and Apple are both looking into music publishing so that if they own the rights to stream the music, you know, they don't have to pay anyone, except the artist. So when you extrapolate where that ends up, that looks like Apple and Spotify being having a direct relationship with artists, like cutting out the middleman, which is the sort of digital dream of the whole music of musicians and fans. I don't want to say the whole music industry, because a lot of the music industry is works for the middleman, but like, that's, you know, the this whole story of like artists making fractions of a cent on their songs getting streamed, like that is crying out for there to be just like a direct relationship between the platform, between the fan and the artist, mediated by one platform provider that basically is bandwidth and hosting and interface. So it makes a ton of sense for Spotify and Apple to be getting into music publishing, but it seems so slow and so top heavy. And I think a lot of that has to be because the industry, the music industry, has such a chokehold on the music that everybody wants to stream that they just make it impossible for these companies to just break in and start publishing music independently. And, you know, I'm trying to learn more about that because I want to understand why Apple Music isn't a service where people can upload their songs they made in GarageBand and have everyone with an iPhone listen to the song and then get paid if they reach a certain like threshold or whatever, or they enter the Apple Music artist program the way that developers do by paying $99 a year or whatever it is. Just think about all of the like positive externalities of that kind of thing for Apple. Like, not only would it sell a ton of devices, because that's how you have GarageBand, so that like that's, I mean, all the, not that all musicians don't already have Apple devices, but you know what I mean. It's like there's a huge lock-in factor for the exact kind of people that Apple wants, both on the listener side or on the listener viewer or whatever. I mean, like the same thing goes for iMovie and Apple Books and iMovie and Apple TV. You know, GarageBand could also have a podcasting side and go to podcasts. You know, books pages can publish to Apple Books now. Like, you know, this should be like a homegrown art ecosystem, and I don't understand why Apple doesn't. Well, I mean, I understand if it's just because like this legal impediment to like this kind of publishing is so insane that they haven't gotten through it yet. Like, that's really sad, but I hope so dearly that that's where they're going, because to me, that's the solution. Is, you know, the billion people out there who are exposed to Apple Music should be able to listen to the music of anyone who makes their music on an Apple device, which is something that Apple, I mean, like, Apple is having, has like a Madonna song. Like, they have the original like mix of a Madonna song, and they have a Today at Apple class where you can go remix a Madonna song in any Apple store. You know, like, they're teaching people the skills. So like, I really hope that where this is all going is like this direct to consumer publishing platform for artists, because all the tools are there and the service is there. It's just like basically the legalese that's not there. And I know this leaves people out, but like, there's an Apple Music app on Android, you know, like, you could at least listen, like, the listeners will not be left out. And that's really what matters, right?
Even if like this isn't the final iteration, right? I think what you're saying is interesting.
Yeah.
That ties it together to my desire to see patronage take off, which is like, patronage certainly works better when an artist is able to be fully independent, because, I mean, I guess you can have a patron, some sort of patronage relationship with your audience and also be part of a label, but that's going to feel a bit taxing to the artist, I think. And if you are able to say, like, I'm doing this on my own, I have found my audience, I have established who my true fans are, I am releasing things into the world on my own accord, audience, give me the ability to continue doing that in the foreseeable future, give me the ability to continue doing this forever. Like, that is an unbeatable idea to me.
Yeah.
And I can think of dozens, if I'm being honest, of musicians, filmmakers, authors, bloggers, podcasters that I would immediately pay money to. And I would be so much happier to pay the money than I am to, you know, freaking Disney Plus or whatever is going to capture the next $12 of my month, of my monthly budget, you know?
Isn't the whole scary thing about Disney Plus that it's going to be $6.99 or something like
is
that?
Is it? Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome, actually. I totally believe that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But I don't want the future to be my monthly subscription budget goes to Netflix, Disney, Hulu, Spotify, you know, like whoever, Apple TV Plus, blah, 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 all these big conglomerates. I think that I would, when I think about that money instead going to like Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah, directly.
And, you know, like directly to people that I care about, and then seeing incredible things come out of it that aren't on crutches because the, you know, some producer or some label required it to be that way. That is remarkable.
Yeah.
And I actually just heard a thing recently about how Netflix has decided, like, there's data that shows that they should never create season 3 of anything. Did you see that?
No, but I'd so get that already.
Yeah, you know, season 1 gets new people, season 2 gets new people, season 3 no new subscribers. So therefore, yeah, we're going to see very few season 3s from Netflix. And like, that just sucks, right? Like, I get it. I get why they're doing that. It makes total sense, but that's not the art that I want to have in the world. And to go back to the word content that we were talking about before, like, that's a content move. That's not an art move, right?
Well, the whole season thing is a content move. It's like they take the story and they stretch it out as long as they possibly can to keep you subscribed.
And like, I want to see my money go towards artists making the thing that they want to create, whatever that means. And I want to see them make artistic goods, not internet content. I don't want any more internet content.
Yeah.
And to go back to my argument of, we just want to support artists, we don't want to get weird rewards. We already have enough stuff in the world, right? Like, I'm not hurting for, like what you were saying, I love Radiohead. I have no interest in listening to their Radiohead. I got plenty of music. Like, I don't need kind of bad music to listen to. If I was in a time where like Radiohead was doing something special in my life, I'd probably download it and listen to it, and it would probably do something cool. I love that it exists, but I don't necessarily think that people were buying it because they were so fascinated by that musical project. In any case, like, I just think that there is a future where artists have these direct relationships with the audience. They have this direct control over the type of art that they make. And it just feels so much better to me than the future where Netflix buys the lives of all of my favorite showrunners, gives them 2 seasons to produce content, and then boots them out. And it feels so much better than the world where, you know, music labels control the musicians and change the albums that they're trying to create to fit the thing that the label is wanting. I don't want any of that anymore. And I think that there's a way out for the first time because of the 1,000 true fans, because of the way that artists are able to independently create things with very small budgets, with very small, you know, like, freaking timetables. It doesn't even take that long anymore to do the things that they want to do sometimes. And it doesn't necessarily correlate to 100% of the artists. I understand that there are people that still need to work within the confines of the older systems, but I think that there are people that see a way out, and I want them to escape and start creating the stuff that I desire to see in the world. Hello, internet friends, it's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of 4 seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have 6. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
The thing that I still don't think we're any closer to breaking through is the cultural, and it's not just like, and I'm not talking about the culture of paying for things. I'm talking about the culture by which people discover stuff and share stuff with each other, and the role that liking something or liking someone plays culturally, in interactions that don't even involve the artist, that what it means to be a fan of so and so, or to share the very fact that you read something or listened to something with your social network, like, those gestures are still caught up in a kind of hype cycle that drives a marketplace dynamic, because people are like buying and selling metaphorically, coolness with each other, and the there's enough demand for coolness that like producers of coolness seek to fill that demand with whatever they can crank out that fits. And that's the pressure that causes, you know, these labels, these middlemen, these producers, whether they work at Netflix or whether they work in Hollywood and sell things to Netflix or whatever it is, to conform and commodify the stuff that's coming out. And I think that the rest of the stuff we talk about on this show has to come around too. Like the places where people play out their cultural like roles and their relationships with each other mediated by art and culture, like the dynamics of that has to change in order for it to just be part of the conversation in a natural way that's about relationships rather than part of a conversation that's about, you know, associating with a given tribal identity for liking certain things, you know, or participating, going to certain festivals, whatever it is. Like there's just so much market around all of this, including penetrating right down to the places where people talk about art and share it with each other. And so like, yeah, the mechanisms of creation and publishing and compensating the publishers have to change, but the whole role that art plays in society has this destructive effect on all of that, as indirect as it is, because it's so much about demand, and it's not even about demand for artists, it's about demand for decorations. And that's the thing that I feel like needs to change. The idea that art is a way of decorating your life with stuff that makes you unique, you know, like that's the mentality driving most of the purchasing decisions that people are making, right? And like that is the opposite mentality from the one you're describing of like giving because you want someone else to be happy, you know, to thrive, to survive. Like it's almost a different process entirely. This is a much more abstract thing that doesn't have like an engineering solution, but I think that that all of this will require a different way of talking about art for lovers of art to sort of discourage the scene and encourage instead like relationships with people. Like this even bears in interesting ways on the kinds of conversations people are just, I feel like, starting to have about famous artists, whereas for the whole 20th century, like artists could kind of get away with anything. They could be terrible people, they could be abusive people, people would know and not care because they were James Brown, to pick a really freaky example that I think a lot of people don't actually know. Like go Google the like 5-part story that I believe is published on CNN.com about like who James Brown really was and what kind of awful stuff he did. You know, that has obviously changed. Like the cultural tone around, you know, famous, powerful, influential people abusing their position has completely changed. You know, maybe that's an inroad into a way of talking about art and fame and celebrity that's about supporting the good people that make good stuff rather than privileging the stuff they make over the people they are. To me, that's the succinct description of the problem on the other side, on the audience right. side, is that artists are characters in everybody's own personal life story right now. Like that's how the pop culture works. And that is the opposite of a relationship. That's not Martin Buber, a great Jewish philosopher, would call that an I-it relationship. And the real like spiritual way of being with other people in the world is an I-thou relationship, where you regard the other person as like a divine being, like a creation of the divine. And like when you regard somebody that way, it completely changes the way that you treat them and the way that you, you know, talk about them and the way that you, and like the way that you celebrate them in the world, like to other people, like like pop culture is the ultimate I-it relationship. I mean, the show is literally called American Idol, you know, it's like sacrilegious. And like, that's what, that is what the idol is, one word for a famous artist in this culture. The more classic word is star, an unattainable, glittering, faraway thing up in the sky. And like, that's not the, like, neither one of those is a relationship, let a relationship of any kind, let alone an I-thou relationship. And the way, in a world where people are like culturally inclined to support the artists that matter to them, artists aren't talked about as idols. Artists are talked about as people, as something like a friend, but somebody treated with the respect and distance that you have for someone you admire, and not treated as like a friend that you own, that is yours. You know, it's an honor thing. And I mean, I think it, I just, the fact that Martin Buber came up to me is the indication that like the issues behind what motivates pop culture run a whole lot deeper than just like simple economics or you know, even aesthetics. Like, it's a spiritual problem that like we treat content as stuff to consume, and it's like an endless quest for more consumption that drives the listening and viewing and reading and playing habits that are paying the bills on the internet these days. And if we had a culture that had that valued more I-thou relationships with other people, you know, I don't think we would expect the same thing of artists at all, and we would certainly feel more indebted to them.